following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
6-Oxo is back thanks to Iron Mag Lab, the gold standard for testosterone boosting and estrogen reduction that all other over-the-counter aromatase inhibitors are compared to is 6-Oxo progesterone. 6-Oxo is the active ingredient in the new E-Control RX from Iron Mag Labs. Iron Mag Labs has resurrected the beast that has been clinically shown to raise free testosterone by as much as 226%. As men age, estrogen rises and testosterone drops. E-Control RX can help reverse this from happening. E-Control RX is suitable for post-cycle therapy to jumpstart natural testosterone production. Get E-Control RX today. Go to IronMagLabs.com today. Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at IronMagLabs.com. Don't wait too long because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to IronMagLabs.com today.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. And in traditional Superhuman Radio form, we're going to be breaking some news today on a study that hasn't been published yet, but it will be shortly, and its ramifications will be heard around the fitness and nutritional industry. And my guest today has been on the show before, and many of you know him as one of the most gifted natural bodybuilders out there today, Lane Norton. How you doing, Lane?
I'm doing great, Carl. How are you doing?
Great, great. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show because your thoroughness in research and your ability not to exaggerate science has always been impactful to me. You have a lot of respect out there in the industry. I know that. You've helped a lot of people build their own bodies as a natural bodybuilder. But you recently added something new to your resume. You did a pull event in a powerlifting competition, right?
Yeah, a lot of people out there know, but a year ago today, actually, I had surgery to repair a torn right pectoral. I was bench pressing. I was actually going to do a powerlifting show back then, and I was bench pressing and felt it rip, and had surgery on it to repair it. Like I said, 1 year ago today. And so as I was coming back from that, I came back, you know, very fast, a lot faster than my doctor anticipated. And I was just kind of, you know, my squat was really going up during my recovery because I was working legs 3 times a week because there was nothing else I could do.
Right.
And then, you know, I started deadlifting again in December. And my very first deadlift session, I pulled 500 easily. And then the next one, I pulled 550, and then the next one, 585 for a double. And so I just thought, man, my deadlift is still really, really good. And I thought, well, why not try to just do a squat deadlift portion of a powerlifting meet? And there was a meet that was going to be close to me, and I said, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. And it actually was 1 month ago today, so 11 months to the day that I had my pec repaired, and went out there, and I had just a fantastic time. I had a really great time. A lot of people showed up to support me. My wife let me do it. She was freaked out about it. She let me do it on Valentine's Day, actually. It was just pretty cool. And ended up with a 520 squat and a 645 deadlift, which was, I competed raw. So that actually ended up being, I've competed in the APA, and for their 220-pound class, that ended up being their world record for raw. And, I just had a fantastic time, and probably going to look forward to doing another one here in the future.
Okay, now let me ask you a couple questions. What were you deadlifting before the pec tear and before the layoff?
I had pulled the week before 615. I probably could have pulled a little more than that. Actually, the week I pulled the 615 using a sumo stance, which isn't my traditional. I usually use a conventional stance, but I wanted to try sumo, and I didn't feel as comfortable doing that. I think I probably could have pulled maybe 620 or 625
back then
before I tore it.
Right.
But the 645 felt very good. It went up very easily, and in fact, my first attempt was 585, and when I got done with it, the head judge came over to me afterwards and said, "You pulled that so fast, I thought you were going to power clean it."
That's funny. Now, what do you think your forced layoff with your pec tear had to contributing to central nervous system recovery and actually giving you a plateau to be stronger to leap from?
You know, I think what happened was my hamstrings, glutes, and lower back are all really immensely strong. I've done stiff-legged deadlifts of 500 pounds before. I can do glute ham raises like there's no tomorrow. But my limiting factor in my deadlift is my quads and whether or not I can budge the bar off the ground. Once the bar leaves the ground, I'm pulling it up.
Right.
And so I think what happened was I really started when I was coming back from my injury, I started squatting three times a week. You know, one day would be heavy, one day would be moderate, and one day would be light. And I think I really made a lot of improvements on my squat. Now, when I say squat, for the first part of it, I was actually squatting with one arm in a Smith machine because obviously my other arm was, you know, at my side because I couldn't raise it up to get to the bar because of the surgery. And so I was just doing one arm Smith machine squats or doing squats with a safety bar.
Right.
And so I just think, you know, doing it that often and teaching my body to recover faster, and I really gained a lot of strength on my squat and gained a lot of strength on my quads. And I think that translated over very well with my deadlift. My deadlift has always been something I never really trained my deadlift that much because the way it works is it tends to be as my squat goes up, my deadlift just goes up
right
along with it.
Because the reality is, like you said, the limiting factor is your quads. So getting it off the ground is the limiting factor because once the bar is in motion, your back can handle the weight.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, just to touch base about the pec tear, when you tore your pec, Was it nagging you? Was there any sign that something was going on, or was it just?
No, it's actually funny you mention that because every problem I've ever had in my body has been on my left side, and I tore my right pec. So I had a bulging disc on the left side of my neck. I had inflammation and all those kinds of things on my left side. Never had any kind of problem with my right side, and it literally there was nothing. There was no warning, nothing. It just happened in a split second. It felt like it's. This is going to make a lot of people cringe, but it felt like when you pull on Saran wrap and it finally tears apart, that's
yeah.
what it felt like.
Really?
That
was probably, the muscle fibers in the fascia letting go, I guess. Now, did you tear it from the insertion or the origination point?
I actually tore it in a really, my surgeon called it the worst tear he'd ever seen.
Really?
What happened was when it first happened, I went into the ER and the doctor there thought it was just a strain, but they really can't tell anything. And then a week later, I could tell something was wrong. It was deformed, you know, very visibly. So I had an MRI done. They thought it was just going to be a partial tear, and what it actually was I fully tore the sternal head, so the lower head of my pec. I tore that completely away from the tendon at the muscle-tendon junction. So the tendon was still intact, but the muscle was separated from the tendon.
Yeah, I can see why that's bad, because if everything comes off, then they just reattach the tendon to the skeletal system and they move on. But you actually left the component that they needed to attach on the bone.
Right, exactly. And what happened was when I went in to see the surgeon, he said, you know, if you had torn the tendon off the bone, that's easy to fix. All we do is put a few anchors in the bone, stitch it back in there, and you're good to go. He said, you actually tore most of the tear was actually on the muscle side of the muscle-tendon junction. So he said, it's going to be like trying to sew wet noodles back together with you.
Man.
He said, I there's a good chance it won't work. And I told him, I said, well, just I want you to try anyway because I'd rather them try and fail than not try at all and go through my whole life thinking maybe I could have gotten this fixed. So fortunately, my surgeon was very, very skilled, and he was able to repair it. Fantastic job.
Are you training chest again?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm back up to I did last night. I did three sets of 20 with 70-pound dumbbells. So, I mean, I'm not back up to full strength, and I'm just doing – you know, high reps, but I mean, really, most of the size is back, and the there's really you can't really there's a little incision, it's very small, and the only difference really in from before is that I, rather than having, like when you flex your pecs, there's an indention near the where the muscle ties in. I don't really have that anymore. The fibers just run straight across. But other than that, you really can't tell.
So how does this affect you as a professional bodybuilder? Because that's really your mainstay. How does this affect you when you're standing up there on stage?
Right. You know, I don't think it's going to affect me that much. I think if I left it unrepaired, I think it would definitely affected me. There was a noticeable divot. You know, I'm sure everybody's seen somebody on stage at a bodybuilding show where they have a torn pec, and, you know, the whole thing, whenever they flex, it just caves in.
Yeah.
And so it really, you know, no matter how much you try to hide that, and no matter how much a judge tries to overlook it, it just throws your symmetry off.
Yeah,
but I don't think it's going to affect me too much, to be honest with you.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Now, are you going to try to push your chest back into, you know, the strength that you had with it before? Or are you going to be careful now? Because, you know, obviously, when you tear something, there's a high probability that you can re-injure it, at least re-injure it, right?
Yeah, I talked to my surgeon about this, and he said that's true. When it heals back together, that area where I tore, it's actually going to be stronger because it's like when you break a bone, it actually becomes stronger in that area because you get more calcium deposits.
Mm-hmm.
In the muscle, like where I tore it, I'm going to get more collagen there, more connective tissue. But the downside to that is it's not the same as the original connective tissue, and it's not as flexible. So there's a greater chance to tear it because of the lack of flexibility.
Yeah,
so
that's what I meant, right.
Yeah, I'm going to work hard on my flexibility. You know, will I ever try to go as heavy as I did before? It's hard for me to say that. Right now I'd say no because I remember what that felt like, and I don't want to ever have that happen again. But, I mean, it's hard to say because it would just depend on how comfortable I felt with it. You know, I don't want to go through my whole life, you know, being petrified of injury because, you know, if I did that, I would never do anything at all. But, you know, at the same time, I want to be very smart about it.
Yeah, you got to go slow. You got to really listen to your body now when it comes to that type of movement, chest movements, and you're going to have to really pay attention. And actually, when you feel like you're ready to go up, you need to wait a couple extra weeks before you go up. And in my opinion, that's what you really need to do.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I've been doing. I mean, I felt like I could easily, you know, press heavier than what I've been doing.
Yeah, but take your time. There's no, you're not in a competition. Hey, you know what I just thought of? And we're going to take a break right after this, but you're a very, very proud natural bodybuilder, but clearly growth hormone could have benefited you, and obviously you didn't need it because you recovered really fast anyway, but I'm just saying, did you ever toy with the idea like, gee, side injections of growth hormone would really help my chest right now?
You know, it's funny because whenever I was coming back and I was doing so well, people started accusing me of being on growth hormone.
See?
But, no, you know, I knew it would heal up fine, you know, and it would heal up, you know, just as strong. The only thing, growth hormone would have just accelerated it. But, you know, I'm not an impatient person. I never have been. If you look at me, like some of my pictures, my progress through the years, I never gained more than, you know, 10 pounds in a year.
Right.
You know, it's just I always been a very patient person. So, really, I never even thought about that.
Cool.
It's not that, you know, I don't have anything against people who decide to do that. I can understand why they would. It's just something where, you know, I knew it was going to be, once I had the surgery and they said it went well, I knew it was going to be fine. And, you know, I'm more than happy to take my time. I know I'm young and got plenty of time to recover.
I know. I just think it's funny because, you know, when you're a natural bodybuilder, you have to remain a natural bodybuilder for life, and it would be, It would actually damage your future career if you would have said, yeah, I went ahead and used growth hormone for this one time,
sure.
And you know, I mean, that would have been like, well, if you did that, then who knows what else you're doing. So I was just curious if it ever crossed your mind, like, gee, you know, some side injections of IGF-1 or growth hormone right now would probably help me heal faster, that's all.
Yeah.
But anyway, all right, listen, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about the reason you're really on the show, and that is you've got some groundbreaking research that your university has done on the different anabolic responses to different protein sources. And everyone's going to want to listen to this because it's going to change the way you look at protein for sure. So stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Lane Norton. We'll be right back.
Green light. If you're like me, you avoid the insulin spike from eating pasta, but not anymore. Miracle Noodle is the world's first no-calorie, no-carbohydrate noodle. You heard me right. Now you can enjoy pasta dishes and stay on your low-carb diet. They have fettuccine, linguine, rigatoni, and more. Even angel hair pasta is now a no-calorie, no-carb food. And Miracle Noodle tastes great. So go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Miracle Noodle banner ad to learn more about how you can start enjoying pasta again, even when you're dieting. Find your Miracle Noodle at superhumanradio.com today.
CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio. Melatonin is the best sleep aid in the world, but it has one flaw, the delivery method. Melatonin tablets are not efficient and can wear off too soon, leaving you wide awake in the middle of the night. Time-release tablets make you feel groggy in the morning. Now there's the Age 4 Sustained Delivery Melatonin Patch. This transdermal patch delivers a precise amount of melatonin from the moment you apply it and continues to do so for an entire 6 hours. This ensures a full night's sleep while waking refreshed and ready to go. Visit ageforce.com and use the coupon code SHRMEL and save 50% off your first order. Go to ageforce.com and use SHRMEL today and sleep better tomorrow. Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Are your goals longevity, endurance, vitality, or wellness? Well, you'll find everything you're looking for at uscellwellness.com. US Cell Wellness was founded on the belief that total well-being begins at the most basic cellular level. Their natural supplements are designed to work with the body to achieve health and vitality. Their formulas are backed by a team of nutritional researchers, healthcare professionals, and nutritional supplement biochemists. Whether you're concerned for your own wellness or a clinician caring for others, it all starts at uscellwellness.com. Save 20% off your first purchase when you use the coupon code SUPER.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
I just want to remind everybody there's lots of free stuff at superhumanradio.com. You can get free samples of Concrete, Promera's new creatine. And we're going to be interviewing one of their scientific people this week, this coming week, about this research that they are providing that shows that Concrete is taken up by the muscle better than any other type of creatine out there. Get free samples of Concrete, free samples of IBNX, free samples of Drive. Lots of free stuff at superhumanradio.com. Check it out. My guest today is Lane Norton. Lane, for those of you who don't know, Lane is a PhD candidate at the University of Illinois. And I guess this is your group that did this study, right, Lane?
Yeah, that's correct.
And okay, so let's talk about the study first of all. Explain how the study was designed.
Okay, so basically what we wanted to do is we wanted to check out how different protein sources impacted skeletal muscle anabolism after a meal based on their different amino acid contents. And so we had this. We used the same total amount of protein in the meal. So it's isonitrogenous, and same total calories, same carbohydrate, fat content. Everything was held constant. The only difference was we had four different protein sources, wheat, soy, egg, and whey. And we fed a meal, and then we looked at protein synthesis at 90 minutes after the meal, which is about where it peaks. We also looked at the activation of several different initiation factors involved in initiating protein synthesis. And basically what we found...
Well, let me ask you a question before you get there. Was there a control group that received a placebo?
Yeah, so we had a fasted group. This is an animal study. It was done in rats. But the rat is a very... and I'm sure all the meatheads out there just say, oh, it was done in rats, it doesn't apply to anything. But rats are actually a very good model, and they've consistently mimicked what we've seen in humans in terms of protein metabolism for the past 10 years. So I have a feeling that this is going to be, you know, when similar studies are done in humans, it's going to be validated.
Gotcha.
But, you know, the nice thing about using animals is they'll do what you tell them to. if you give them something to eat, they're going to eat it.
Right.
And you don't really need like a double blind placebo.
But you did have a control group, and the control group got what? Did they get a placebo or nothing at all?
They got nothing at all.
Gotcha.
So we wanted a baseline of to make sure that the response that we were actually seeing a response. So one, we wanted to see if there were differences between groups, and then also look at the proportion of the response relative to animals that weren't fed anything at all.
And you said what size protein dose did they get?
It was a 16% protein meal, 16% protein, 54% carbohydrate, and 30% fat. So we basically wanted to make it kind of like the RDA.
Right.
So we wanted to look, we were secondary to what we were examining, we also kind of wanted to look at what the RDA recommends and whether that's, because the RDA just says, you can get your protein from wherever as long as you get a certain amount and it's
right.
fine.
Right.
And the measure of protein quality that's currently used is something called the PDCOS.
Right.
And I'm not going to go into a long discussion about how the PDCOS is calculated, but basically they use limiting amino acids. So whatever the lowest content essential amino acid in a protein is, they use that to determine how high of a quality of a protein is. And our theory is that you can't just use that to determine protein quality.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense because that particular protein, that particular amino acid may not have the same assimilation rate as other amino acids in that profile.
Yeah, that's true. And the other thing is, too, there are specific amino acids that have metabolic effects that you just can't quantify for,
like leucine.
The current thinking is that once you get to a sufficient level of, say, leucine, the rest is just going to be oxidized anyway, so it's just wasted, quote unquote wasted. And what the current model fails to account for is just because something's oxidized doesn't mean it doesn't initiate signaling before it's oxidized or even after it's oxidized.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not accounting for these molecular actions of amino acids. So we basically, the one thing we did do was we supplemented the wheat group with additional lysine because wheat is deficient in lysine. And so basically, by the PDCOS standards, all these proteins were considered the same quality level.
Gotcha.
So so we wanted to test that in an outcome of skeletal muscle protein synthesis.
Right.
So what we found was, interestingly, wheat and soy did not stimulate protein synthesis above fasted levels. There was no difference. And egg and whey both stimulated protein synthesis above fasted levels, and it looks like whey was actually better than egg. So there's egg was intermediate, whey was the best, and wheat and soy didn't have any response.
Now, this is really interesting because, there's a lot of old-time bodybuilder guys out there as well as some current guys who say the gold standard is egg protein because it has a better amino acid profile. But is it because does whey have a greater degree of leucine than egg by any chance?
Yes, Yeah, actually, so the leucine content of the respective protein sources we tried was wheat is about 6.8% leucine, soy is about 8% leucine, egg is about 9% leucine, and whey is about 12% leucine. Whey is by far the most leucine-rich source of protein.
Yeah. Wow, that's really exciting. Now, before we get even in deeper with some stuff you shared with me when we were standing at the Arnold talking about this, you know, the first thing that I want to say is those of you out there who are vegetarians who believe that you're, you know, doing your body good by eating a vegetarian style, you really need to rethink it and look at the lacto-vegan approach. I mean, if you're a devout vegetarian, because I really think that, we are not genetically predisposed to eat exclusively vegetables. We're not herbivores. So, you know, this again shows you that, you know, if you're missing something, if you're not at least including milk, raw milk or whey protein or whatever you want to do, but some, you know, the lacto-vegan model seems to be a better choice. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's a good point. And soy, you know, is a very interesting case, because if you look at I don't think that leucine actually tells the whole story of this experiment, because if you look at, you know, egg had a significant increase in protein synthesis. Well, the difference in egg and soy in leucine content is only 1%. It's 8% in soy, 9% in egg. So we thought, well, what's going on here? I mean, it would be very, you know, unless there's just some kind of, you know, really tight threshold amount that you need. So we looked at through the literature, and we actually found that soy, we analyzed blood glucose and blood insulin. Those were both lowest in the soy group. They were actually even lower than fasted. The insulin in the soy group was lower than fasted insulin. And we also went into the literature and found that soy protein actually activates a signaling protein in the cell called AMP kinase.
Right.
AMP kinase actually can inhibit protein synthesis, and it inhibits mTOR signaling. So basically, there may be enough leucine in soy to potentially initiate the response, but it's actually inhibited by the fact that you have these phytoestrogens or these isoflavones that inhibit protein synthesis by activating AMP kinase. So I would also say to people who like that. There were some people would argue that activating AMP kinase is a good thing because it actually increases insulin sensitivity and GLUT4 translocation, and some of these things are good. But in terms of muscle anabolism, that's very bad because it inhibits protein synthesis. So I would say if you're going to have soy, have it with some extra leucine so you can help overcome.
So you overcompensate, right? You can compensate for what it's about to do by increasing the signaling from the leucine.
Exactly.
That's really interesting. So maybe some manufacturers out there who are producing soy protein products will get the message from this study and start to increase, you know, fortify it with additional leucine.
I think that'd be a great thing. But I think they'll probably try and argue with the validity of the study first before they do anything like that. But who knows? You may have some people that are very open-minded and think that that's worth a try.
Yeah. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk more about this research, and I want to talk more about some of the other stuff you shared with me about the soy group. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We're talking today with Lane Norton, natural bodybuilder, now powerlifter extraordinaire, and great contributor to nutrition. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
So I keep it low, keep a secret code, so everybody else don't have to know. Don't keep your love down, your love down, keep your love down.
If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest protein bar banner ad to try them today.
No 2 amino acids have been studied more than creatine and beta-alanine, and no two amino acids have been shown to independently improve athletic performance better than creatine and beta-alanine. When you join these two ergogenic powerhouses together, you get unparalleled results. And when you bypass the stomach and deliver them right to the bloodstream, you get the best single legal performance-enhancing product bar none. Save 50% off your initial order by using the coupon code CB50. That's CB50. Go to ageforce.com today.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it and you'll be a believer too.
Finally, a time-released energy tablet. No more shots or drinks filled with sugar. Atomic Tabs are here. Atomic Tabs are the only time-released high-energy chewable tablet available anywhere. Atomic Tabs have as much caffeine as a cup of coffee combined with energy and focus-enhancing ingredients that will give you a long-lasting wave of energy with no jitters or crash. Energy comes on in 5 minutes after you chew it. Go to AtomicTabs.com. Be one of the first 10,000 people to sign the mailing list and get a free sample of Atomic Tabs. Go to AtomicTabs.com today. Chew your energy.
When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking today with Lane Norton about a study that's about to be published by his group over at University of Illinois comparing four types of protein sources and its anabolic responses: whey, egg, soy, and wheat. Now, Lane, you said something to me when we were talking at the Arnold about this. You said that the soy group actually had a lower anabolic response than the control group, right? I mean, was that what I heard, or did I misinterpret that?
No, you know, it's. I'll be quite honest. We don't have all the data compiled yet,
okay.
So I don't feel comfortable quite making that statement.
Okay.
But it looks like pretty much on all facets when we looked at it: blood glucose, blood insulin, protein synthesis, initiation factors. They're all just a little lower in the soy group, and so it just seems like. You know, there's the inherent phytoestrogens, the isoflavones in soy, kind of impair the anabolic response to a meal.
You know what's really interesting about this? I for some reason my brain keeps going back and forth with, like, you know, it used to be egg and whey protein were the dynamic duo. You know, you have so many people who have, you know, if you combine egg and whey, you've got the great protein, and that's the best. But I'm starting to wonder if whey and soy might not be in proper ratios, be a dynamic duo, only because you're looking for two things. You're looking for the anabolic response. You're also looking for, and as we become smarter about this, you're looking for greater sensitivity to insulin. Is there a way to combine them, you think, or does it, does, is it simply, you know, soy adding and add more leucine and that's it?
I think combining them is probably a good idea. And as you mentioned, you know, people tend to look at things black and white, and it's really not. Although soy may inhibit the anabolic response, you know, activating AMP kinase is great in terms of insulin sensitivity, and I think that's why we saw lower values of blood glucose and blood insulin, is because the animals were more insulin sensitive from consuming the soy diet. So I think that consuming soy with, say, you know, whey, something that's more anabolic, hopefully can overcome that problem while still getting some of the benefits of insulin sensitivity and things like that from soy. You know, I think all those are good ideas. Now, it's hard to tell, you know, how much whey for how much soy.
Right.
You know, we just don't know those things right now. But I definitely agree with you in concept. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind.
What about the idea of, you know, there's I remember talking with someone a while ago, and I remember reading an article maybe a year ago someplace, and I can't place it. I was just thinking about it during the break. I wanted to try to dig it up real fast, and I couldn't. Someplace where, you know, the whole idea of, and Dave Palumbo is another one who promotes this in his Palumbo diet, but the whole idea of protein and fats at a sitting and then carbohydrates at a different sitting, and, you know, not combining all three of these together in one meal, but kind of timing them where you have your protein and fat meal, and then later on you can have a carbohydrate-rich meal. I wonder if there's a timing to pre- and post-workout nutrition using the benefits of whey and soy, like when you want insulin. Like, okay, for instance, I'm sorry I sound so scattered, but there's amongst drug-using bodybuilders, there's a new paradigm shift on the use of insulin. They're saying that insulin is best used before the workout, which is counterintuitive. Naturally, you have to supplement with carbs throughout the workout in the form of a drink, but this is the best time because the muscles are ready to be, you know, have nutrients shuttled in during the workout. Okay. So, and I'm thinking out loud here, and I'm going to put my foot in my mouth, but it won't be the first time. You know, I'm wondering if, like, maybe the pre-workout meal with soy and the post-workout meal with whey.
I see where you're going with it. I'm going to address a few points. First off, I've never been a huge fan of the idea that you need to separate fat and carbohydrates. Now, I say that, and I cautiously, because I think, you know, the idea behind separating fat and carbs kind of came from the idea that if you've got high levels of fatty acids, those actually can impair insulin signaling and impair insulin sensitivity, and so now you've got high carbohydrates, high insulin with high fatty acids, so you're kind of having this, you know, you've got high insulin reducing fat oxidation, increasing fat storage, and you've got high fatty acids, so it's easier to store them as fat. You know, I think that, you know, if you're talking about 100 grams of carbs with 30 grams of fat, yeah, I think that's I definitely wouldn't do something like that. But I think if you're having, 10 grams of fat with, 30 grams of carbs, I think that's something like that's fine. You know, people tend to take information, and again, we talked about being black and white, swing either to one extreme or the other. I think it's important to keep everything in balance. Now, what you said about, you know, trying to increase insulin sensitivity using soy, I think that's a pretty good idea. Now, we need to remember that, you know, you don't want to. It's actually been shown that perhaps supplementing pre-workout with protein is just as important, or even more important than
right.
post-workout.
Right.
So it's important to make sure that we still get the same anabolic response. So I think if you're going to do that, you do that with the suggestion that you should probably add supplemental leucine,
yeah,
or combine it with a high leucine content protein like whey. But, I think all the things you're bringing up are very, very interesting questions and probably need to be looked at some point.
I like the idea of a fortified soy protein. So, you know, maybe even with some additional BCAAs, not just leucine, but some building block amino acids in there, that both will stimulate insulin sensitivity and an anabolic response as a pre-workout drink. And then your post-workout, you just go strictly with your whey protein, because now your body is thumping along and now you just want to build, that's it.
Yeah, I think, these are all great ideas, and I'd love to, I wish I had, wish I had enough time to try them all out.
Right.
One other thing I wanted to comment on, and I think it's not really that relevant to our discussion, but I think it's important because people tend to, like I said, think black and white about these type of things, is insulin in terms of muscle protein anabolism. A lot of people, you know, we always hear about insulin being an anabolic hormone and, you know, it increases protein synthesis, decreases protein breakdown. That's really, insulin by itself in adults is not anabolic unless you're taking supplemental levels of insulin. You can't get enough of a physiological insulin response to increase protein synthesis if it's in the absence of amino acids. Now, insulin will potentiate the effects of amino acids, meaning if you give, for example, if you give carbohydrate alone, it doesn't matter how much you give in an adult, you're not going to get an anabolic response. If you give amino acids alone, you will get an anabolic response, but it won't be as good as if you give carbohydrate plus amino acids.
Right.
So there's a synergistic effect. So I think there's a lot of, like, you'll see a lot of people out there who post-workout, they'll have 150 grams of carbs from dextrose. Well, that's just entirely too much. You don't.
Right.
You only need a moderate increase in plasma insulin to really get this benefit. So, you know, I think some of these big, ridiculous post-workout shakes can probably be cut down, and people could actually, you know, even use a small amount of dextrose and then whole food.
Right, right. You know, another thing that comes to mind, I interviewed Dr. Scott Connolly. We did a series, a four-show series on insulin resistance, you know, the etiology, and ending up with the final show being what you can do to help reverse insulin resistance. And in the third show, we talked about anabolic steroids and their effect on insulin resistance. That high doses, you know, super physiological doses of anabolic steroids, whether they be testosterone or, you know, a molecule of testosterone, they will potentiate insulin resistance. And Scott said during the interview that insulin resistance in muscle, eventually, if the doses are so high, will spill over to other tissue. But in muscle, he said that insulin resistance is effective in maintaining an anabolic nature for the muscle. And when I asked him, I probed into that, he implied, and I put this on a board, and I got lambasted for it, and I still haven't dug it up. I've got to go back and listen to it, but he did imply that in some instances, insulin can be catabolic if it can enter muscles in an effort to shuttle amino acids out for amino acid pooling.
Well, there's only one study I've ever seen that would possibly support that. It was done by, I believe it was Elena Volpe's lab, but I could be wrong about that. And it was in elderly people who were pretty insulin resistant as it is compared to young. And they actually found that they did amino acids plus insulin or amino acids alone, and they actually found that amino acids plus insulin had a lower protein synthetic response. But there's actually quite a few other studies that have shown, even in the elderly, that amino acids plus insulin is still better than amino acids alone.
Right.
So, I mean, it would be hard to comment on that.
Yeah, no,
given
I know.
Given the lack of research.
I made the mistake of putting that out there, and, you know, I mean, everybody was like, insulin is the most anabolic hormone in the world, you dummy. What are you talking about? It's like, look, man, you know, don't shoot. I've been meaning to go back and listen to that interview and see if I just misinterpreted what he said. But the bottom line is, like you said, I mean, insulin, the physiological doses of insulin that our bodies are producing are not what we're talking about when people talk about the anabolic effects of insulin.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you're injecting insulin, you know, compensatory to what your body is producing, now we've got a different story. But that's a very, very dangerous protocol, and it can only be endeavored by people who clearly understand it and who've been taught by people who have done it. Because I know of a bodybuilder who is in Arizona, who is in a long-term care facility. He's only 34 years old, from severe brain damage by miscalculating his carbohydrate intake with his insulin injection, and he had a severe diabetic coma and severe brain damage as a result. And he's fed through a feeding tube now, so it's nothing to screw around with.
Absolutely not. I mean, I kind of, you know, I don't really research a lot of this stuff as much because being in the natural game, and most of my clients are drug-free. I do work with a few guys who use anabolics, but I, you know, I disclose, I say that when I work with them, that if you're coming at me to ask information about anabolics, I really don't know that much.
Right.
But, you know, there's kind of a little bit of a blasé attitude out there about, you know, as much as there's an overreaction in the media about how bad steroids are and how bad all these things are, and we know they aren't that bad. You know, we know that in moderate doses, they're, in a lot of cases, can be relatively safe. Now,
right.
That said, there's also kind of a backlash in the bodybuilding community where anytime anything is posted about steroids that shows they're somewhat bad, people completely go back, and it's almost like a denial that steroids or any of these things could possibly cause anything wrong. They're nothing but good. So I think people need to find a moderate ground and realize
right.
that, you know, yeah, there can be bad things. If you do too much of anything, it'd be bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just being smart about it. So.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. And you're right. I never thought about it in that context. But you're right. The same way that the media exaggerates, the bodybuilding community tends to act like, oh, there's nothing wrong with this at all. And so, the truth is that in life, the middle ground is always where the truth lies. We're talking today with Lane Norton about the different responses, the anabolic responses to various types of protein. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SH Radio. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
I have never endorsed a training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to SuperHumanRadio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both the Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint forum to ensure your success.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at Wise Choice Medicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee Eye Drops. The name says it all.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro Series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPen technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, Power Blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with Power Blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power Block, the world's best dumbbells.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest today is Lane Norton. We're talking about the various anabolic responses to different types of protein sources, and clearly it looks like whey protein wins again. Would you say that from this study?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it seems that way, and I think that probably two reasons for that. One, the high leucine content, and two, the fact that it's so rapidly digested. You see the amino acids from whey appear in the bloodstream much, you know, they cause a much higher plasma spike in plasma amino acids than the other proteins. And I think, you know, part of the anabolic response and part of the way the muscle senses the anabolic capacity of a meal is by sensing the deflections in plasma amino acids. So having such a big deflection, I believe, is an advantage for whey.
Yeah. Now, I know that you guys didn't look into this in this study, but what would you say about, I mean, there are people out there who are detractors of whey protein, not in the sense of whey in general, but the fact that these isolates that have no fats whatsoever in them undergo gluconeogenesis so spontaneously once they hit the system, because they're digested so quickly, that they actually raise blood glucose levels.
Yeah, this is kind of back to the, they're almost kind of in the same thinking of the RDA, in that, you know, well, if something is oxidized, it must be wasted. With the whole, you know, it's kind of looking, there were studies, I'm sure people remember the casein versus whey studies, in which they implied that casein was better than whey because there was less oxidation of the amino acids. Well, just because that's people thinking of protein as purely a substrate for protein synthesis. So
right,
the actual building of proteins. If you look at it that way, you actually only need about an extra 8 grams of protein per day, because that's all that it actually, that you actually net. That's,
right,
that is about the max net deposition of amino acids and protein. But that's not how to think of it, because protein actually stimulates muscle to make more muscle. So if you think of them, about them as signaling molecules, it doesn't matter if something gets oxidized and it's not used for as a substrate. It matters if it actually impacts the rate of protein synthesis. And we've, you know, it's been shown time and time again that whey is superior for increasing muscle protein synthesis.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of raw milk, and there's a lot to be said about the transporter enzymes in raw milk, yet making the whey and casein that is in raw milk even more bioavailable. And truthfully, I mean, I love, there's a product that we advertise on this show, made by American Whey, American Sports Nutrition, called American Whey. And I love, they have the best, I mean, it just tastes so damn good. It mixes so easy, and it's very inexpensive. I love their product. So those are the two soy, whey proteins that I'm using, the one that's in raw milk and the American, which whey proteins do you like?
As many people know, I'm sponsored by Syvation, but honestly, and I can say this without having to feel like I'm lying to anybody, I think their whey protein is the best I've ever tasted. It's very low carb, very low fat, and it's actually the Syvation, their old sister company, Primaforce, had a whey protein before that, and my wife thought it was nasty, and I liked it. It was called Substance. But now
I still have this shirt, Substance Abuser.
Substance
Abuser. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
But my wife just wouldn't touch that. And then we got the new protein came in, and now she eats it. She eats probably 3 bowls of oatmeal a day, and she puts a scoop in every bowl of oatmeal. She loves it.
Substance was a whey protein isolate, correct?
Yes, it was.
And I think the problem with a lot of the early, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the problem with a lot of the WPIs was mouthfeel. They, you know, they had these, berry flavored WPIs and they had these watermelon flavored WPIs. But when you drank them, they made your mouth feel dry and they also caused some reflux. They were like too, I don't know if it was the flavors that they were using, and I don't know about, substance, but the WPIs I was drinking back then just didn't taste good. They didn't taste good.
Yeah, I never really had any problem with substance. I thought it tasted pretty good. But certainly WPIs aren't as tasty as concentrates are. And I think probably some of that just has to do with the processing of it. And honestly, I don't know enough about processing to really make comments on that.
Yeah.
But it does seem like there's definitely that trend that the WPCs taste better. And really, there's not that much difference in anabolic capacity between a concentrate and an isolate. But the difference being, if you have any kind of digestive problems, you definitely should be looking at an isolate rather than a concentrate,
right?
Because concentrate can aggravate some of those things.
Right, right. Now, there's a new protein that seems to be on the horizon and all the buzz, and I hope I pronounce it right, but it's a whey protein hydrolysate.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
You have any opinions on that?
So whey, it's basically just whey protein that's chopped up into very, very short peptides. The idea being that it's very rapidly assimilated. Those will taste very, very bad compared to the, they're going to have a very acidic taste to them. Now, that said, they probably will be digested faster, and maybe I have a hard time believing that it's going to make a significant difference, but that said, it's going to be hard to know until we really see the data. Now, I believe there was one study done comparing a hydrolysate and a whey protein concentrate, and they didn't really find any difference in digestibility or how fast amino acids got into circulation. Now, it could be that our current methods for measuring those sorts of things aren't sensitive enough to pick up the differences, but it certainly seems like it's not going to make a huge difference. I mean, and if it is, it might be a difference between, 20 minutes and 25 minutes. Is it really, enough to impact?
Well, they're expensive, too, I stand corrected, but I think the hydrolysates are really pretty pricey right now.
Yes, they're very pricey. So, I mean, my recommendation would be if your digestive system tolerates concentrate fine, there's no reason that you can't use that.
Yeah, and you know what? I love whey protein because it allows me, I prepare a lot of my own meals, and it takes time. And even though Sunday nights, I usually cook a lot of my chicken ahead of time and then put it in baggies, and, so I have it handy. But, I mean, if it wasn't for that shaker bottle and that whey protein that I can just throw down, and on top of everything else, I've broken three glass blender tumblers.
the glass tumbler. Yeah.
I've broken three of them this year so far. And so I can't even blend a good, because my favorite thing is raw milk fortified with whey protein. And then I usually put some brewer's yeast in it, a couple raw eggs, and two or three tablespoons of raw uncooked oat flour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like one of my meal replacements, when I'm on the run. But I can't even do those. So right now it's whey protein. And this stuff is just great. It goes down easy. It doesn't bother my stomach. And I know it's working for me.
Yeah. No, it's definitely one of the tastier proteins out there. I mean, I think it's probably the tastiest protein there is. Inherently, when we get the raw whey powder in lab and I mix up the diets, you can just take the raw whey powder and put it on your tongue, and it actually tastes okay unflavored.
Right. I had some, the folks over at American Sports Nutrition sent me a bag of unflavored whey protein, and I did a lot of things with it. I mean, it was amazing. It has kind of a reminiscent of the old Carnation instant milk flavor.
Yep. Yep.
But it's not just tolerable. It tastes good. It tastes like dehydrated milk or something like that.
Yep, exactly.
So what's on the horizon for Lane Norton? What else is going on in your life? What are you looking forward to right now?
Well, doing a lot of trying to sell my DVD. Here comes my plug. I just last year put out a DVD. It's basically my current training and nutritional theories. I got a lot of cutting edge stuff, and it's not like a typical bodybuilding DVD. It's very informative, and it's very fast-paced, high energy. Anybody who's ever seen my show on bodybuilding.com knows that it's not boring at all. It's very entertaining. So A lot of people really, really liked that show, and we sold a lot of copies. I actually had the DVD. It was reviewed in Iron Man and Mike Pusnello of MD reviewed it, and both got really rave reviews. So I'm really excited about that.
Where can people find your DVD?
They can find it on my website at biolane.com, or they can find it at bodybuilding.com, and soon it's going to be available in some other stores as well. It's also available on Iron Man's web store, and so it's going to be available some other places as well coming up, but we're just working on getting those things finalized.
Cool.
And then something else I'm excited about is my wife is going to do her first figure shows in May, so I'm really excited about that. And she's been doing fantastic. She's for those of her, we call her the Latin assassin, and the emphasis on lat because she's got just a fantastic V taper. And anyways, it's really neat to be on the other side of the coin, watching your significant other diet when they're used to watching you diet. And
uh-huh.
So she's going through all the changes that I'm used to seeing, and she's having to go through the hardships and all those things, but she's just doing a fantastic job, and I'm really excited to see how well she does.
Was she always very supportive when you had to diet down for a show?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we actually met when I was 6 weeks out from a show in 2004.
Oh my God!
And yeah, and so my first I had to. Disclose to you that I don't look like this all the time.
Not only that, but I bet that made it hard for you to socialize because you were dating and you probably wanted to take her out to dinner, and you would take her out to dinner, and she's probably thinking, "Oh my God, this guy is so anal about everything he eats."
Yeah, you know, she really, I think she always saw it as a trade off. She's like, you know, yeah, maybe it's tough to go out to do those sorts of things, but you know what? He's got a better body than, you know, 99% of people out there walking the street, so
right.
I'm not going to complain too much.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's but she's always been extremely supportive and, you know, my biggest fan, and she's always, you know, when I won my pro card, she ran backstage and she had a white sweater on and she came to give me a hug, and I was like, no,
pro
I got
tan.
my tanner on. She's like, I don't care, you know. So she's always, you know, she's great. She's
what is her first name?
Oh, her name's Isabel.
Isabel. Okay. Well, yeah. Isabel, Superhuman Radio listeners are wishing you luck on your upcoming competition. We hope you do well. Obviously, she's got you on her side, so conditioning is going to be probably on her side because you always – I mean, I'm always amazed. I mean, I think I told you this once on a forum somewhere, but you look like you were carved out of mahogany when they put you on the tan on. I mean, the striations in your body, it doesn't even look like a real body. It looks like something that they carved out of wood. It really does.
Well, I've always said that there are a few things you can't control when you're getting ready for contests. You can't control your genetics. They are what they are. You can't control your symmetry. It is what it is for the most part. When you start dieting, that's pretty much the muscle mass you're going to have when you get done. You're not going to really add significant muscle mass as a natural bodybuilder during prep. So there's a few things you can control. You can getting as lean as possible and doing all the little things right, doing the tanning and the posing. And so there's, you know, whenever I see somebody who's kind of out of shape on stage or you know, didn't do things right, or they don't have a good tan or their posing is bad, I'm thinking, why would you do that? I mean, that's one of the things you can actually control.
Right.
You know, you can't control a lot of these things out there, but there's some stuff you can control, and you better make sure you get that right. So that's always been, I've always tried to do the little things right.
You know, and the other thing is that a lot of these bodybuilders, when it comes to going to the show itself, I mean, you have to. There's a lot to be said for the diet. When you've been dieting that long, and your body is vanquished, literally vanquished, the brain doesn't function very well anyway. I mean, you know, sometimes you're making decisions on the spur of the moment, and you really aren't in a position to make decisions. I mean, I was backstage at the Arnold this year, because of my press passes, and I was watching. You know, I watched Kai Greene come off the stage, go down to his knees and lay down on the floor for 20 minutes. They came back and they gave him oxygen. I mean, the athletes, when they step on those stages, those of us who are sitting in the audience looking on, we don't realize how completely eradicated their bodies are at that point in time. And the brain doesn't work that well either when you're starving and you're dehydrated and all those other things take place. It's like you have to surround yourself with good people who are going to say honestly to you, you know what, your tan looks like crap, or you need to do this, you need to do that. Because if
exactly.
you're going to these shows by yourself and you're depending on, yourself to make these decisions at that moment when you're showing up there, you are spent. You're spent.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I don't. For those that know me, I don't really deplete water or anything like that. I think a lot of some of that stuff, and this, I'm not going to go off on a big long rant about that, but I think a lot of that stuff is just pure myth. And I've always gotten in the shape I've gotten in and never cut water. Or
are
anything
you joking?
Like
you get that lean and that striated, and you don't cut water?
Nope, don't cut water at all. A lot
I mean,
of
do, you
stuff,
do you cut back on it, or do you continue to drink the same amount of water that you always do throughout the year?
I have 2 gallons of water the day of the show. The only thing I do is I reduce it a little bit, about an hour or two beforehand, just so I'm not having to pee while I'm on stage. But water in your natural state, you hold most of your water inside your muscle. It's only when you start really futzing with. I mean, let me put it to you this way: how many times have you heard a guy say, "Man, I look great the week before the show, and the day of the show, I just looked awful." And then how many more times have you heard that as opposed to, "God, I looked like crap the week before, but the day of the show, I really nailed it and looked fantastic."
Right.
I mean, how many? It's probably.
Oh my God! Could it be that?
One.
Could it be that simple? You know. I mean, I know that a lot of bodybuilders, competitors, will manipulate sodium and potassium so that the little bit of water that they do hold ends up in the muscle as opposed to under the skin. But that can become a very dangerous. And risky thing,
What people don't realize actually is, okay, let me just run it down real briefly. Usually you're cutting water at the same time that you're cutting sodium, you're loading potassium, and you're loading carbs. That is just it's a death sentence for muscle fullness. And let me tell you why. You're loading carbs. Well, the transporter in your small intestine that transports glucose is sodium dependent, and they've actually shown that low-sodium diets will actually reduce the activity of that transporter. So now you've got glucose that's not getting transported across the intestinal membrane as effectively as possible, and you're going to have residual glucose sitting in your small intestine, and since that's a solute, it's going to draw water into that area, draw water into your gut, making you look more bloated. Then you're also, when you cut sodium, they actually did a study at 20 years ago, they totally cut sodium out of these guys' diets, and they looked at what happened to blood levels of sodium. Nothing happened. They were conserved perfectly because the kidneys just completely stopped excreting sodium.
Right.
It was totally being reabsorbed. But when you reabsorb sodium, you have to reabsorb it with water. So now you're reabsorbing water back into the back out of the kidneys, back into circulation. But now since your sodium is low, since your
sodium intake is low, right?
Your blood pressure is going to be reduced, and you're not going to have the pressure to keep that water in your vascular system. It's going to start leaking back into the interstitial space. So now what you've got is you've got soft, deflated muscles because you don't have enough water. You've got
and enough pressure to keep them full.
Right. And how many times have you heard a guy say, "Man, I couldn't get a pump backstage before I went out."
Right.
Well, it's because they were totally depleted of water. I mean, it's really a lot of these, you see all these things these gurus have these guys do in the final. And I actually talked with Dave Palumbo about this when I was on a radio show with him, and I believe he kind of agreed with me, is that a lot of these gurus do a lot of these final week tweaks, because if they didn't do that, then a lot of these people hiring them would say, "Well, why am I hiring you?"
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right. It's almost like when you go to the doctor and you say, I'm sick, and they give you an antibiotic, even though the antibiotic isn't going to do anything for you. They feel like you expect it.
Right, exactly. And if you're, the other thing is that's how they keep them hooked, because if they're having you adjust 1,500 different variables at once, you say, "Well, there's no way I could do this by myself." And then when you don't look your best on stage, they say, "Well, we just had to do this a little bit different. Well, next time we'll do that."
Yeah.
And they think, "Well, I can't go with a different guy, or, I can't do something because he's almost got me right there. I just got to do this, or
right.
I just got to cut my water." The other thing that's problem that's come up with this is judges, they don't tell it like it is. Now, let me tell you why, really briefly.
Sure.
A judge goes to a show, doesn't usually get paid, and if they get paid, it's not that much. They sit there, they're volunteering their time, they have to sit there for, 8 hours, 10 hours out of a day. Competitor comes up to them and says, "Why did I place the way I did?" "Well, you were holding water." They don't say you weren't lean enough, for the most part. They say you were holding water because they don't want to hear a 10-minute sob story about how hard somebody dieted So they just tell them they're holding water, and that person thinks, oh, well, that's just something I have to take care of in the final week. That's not, you know, plus when you tell somebody they're not lean enough, they take that personally. They take that as an indictment on themselves.
Right.
And it makes them feel bad. And again, the judge doesn't want to sit there and hear a 10-minute sob story about how hard you dieted.
Right.
So for the most part, they just tell you you're holding water because it gets across what they're trying to say. You're too soft, but it also makes it so, you know, the competitor doesn't feel bad about themselves. It's just something they have to get done in the final week. When in reality, let me tell you what, I've worked with so many guys that I've seen them just have shredded, striated glutes, you know, 3 weeks out.
Right.
They're drinking 2 gallons of water a day, taking in 5,000 milligrams of sodium a day.
Right.
I had a guy on Tommy Jeffers. He posts on MD's board. He posted some pictures of him 4 weeks out, just unbelievably vascular. And people were asking, well, are you cutting your water this early? Are you cutting your sodium down? He's like, no, I had, you know, a big salty meal right before this, you know? So, you know, a lot of it's just, you know, it's dogma that's been passed down. And, like, even when I tell people, you know, people that work with me for the first time that we're not going to have them cutting the sodium or water, a lot of times I get a lot of resistance because
I bet they probably say, oh, forget it. I think I made a bad choice. I got to go
right,
someplace
exactly,
else.
Exactly, because they think, oh, my God, you know, when in reality it's about getting lean. I mean, that's what it is. It's just about, and a lot of these guys out there, they kid themselves because they think it's just a final week thing. They need to drop more water. No, you're too fat.
Yeah, you didn't get the job done getting lean. That's the bottom line. It had nothing to do with the water at all. You know, I understand it. I mean, it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. All right, well, anyway, listen, Lane, I want to thank you for taking time to come on Superhuman Radio and talk about the anabolic response of various types of proteins. Clearly, whey protein wins in this particular instance. And soy protein has some benefits, but it's probably not, it's not going to be the most anabolic. It looks like wheat didn't even come in, huh? I mean, wheat really.
Yeah, wheat was no different than fasted, which we expected because we've actually done studies comparing whey and wheat before. So yeah, wheat just doesn't have enough leucine content to really make a difference.
There you go. And once again, it comes down to the leucine content, which those of you who are buying free-form amino acids and you're not buying leucine, you really need to rethink that purchase as well. And again, you are a Sivation-sponsored athlete, correct?
That is correct. And I've been with them for 5 years now.
And Mark is a great guy over there. I know him. You can visit Sivation, SCIVATION.com.
Yep.
To learn more about Sivation. Yeah, there you go. And then your website is BioLane, BioLayne.com, correct?
That's correct.
And people can retain your services if they want contest preparation, nutritional advice, and all that sort of good stuff. They can get in touch with you there.
Yep, go check it out, and you can my contact information is on there, and please send me an email.
Okay, there you go. So eat your protein. Get big
right.
and strong like Lane.
All right,
Lane.
Carl,
thanks for being on the show,
it.
Tell it's Isabella, right? Or Isabel?
Isabel.
Tell Isabel, thank you for letting us talk to you today. Okay.
I will. Thanks,
all right,
Carl.
Talk to you later.
It.
All right. Bye bye.
Take care.
Well, that's the end of Superhuman Radio. We'll have another show for you tomorrow. So tune in then.